communicating across and within cultures. Welcome to the 6th of 13 podcasts based on our new book, Business Communication, Rhetorical Situations, that's from Broadview Press. That's broadview.com. Each of the podcasts gives an overview of the chapter it focuses on, and this chapter is about communicating across and within cultures. In the book, we use rhetorical situations. These are like mini cases. And what they really are is a kind of a narrative structure to give students a situation in which they can apply what we've been talking about in the chapter to a particular instance or situation. So I talk about those, a little bit of background about some of the rhetorical situations we produced and some of the things that I highlight when I teach from the chapter. So one of the principles that we're operating from in the book is that communication occurs across cultures, but cultures are not within national boundaries. They aren't defined by national boundaries. So within any particular nation, there's going to be different cultures. So we get started thinking about that. So in some cases, that's multiculturalism. That's the way it's talked about in Canada. We know there's different kinds of cultures throughout North America. Some of them are defined by their language. So Spanish-speaking, English-speaking, French-speaking, Mandarin and Cantonese-speaking, Hindu and Urdu-speaking cultures. So one of the things we talk about early in the chapter is what constitutes another cultural group. So what are the things that sort of make a cultural unit? And we really talk about those as social practices and objects that unite people. Now, when you try to communicate across cultures, in this case, subcultures within North America, you need to understand a little bit about how they operate. We begin with a couple of pages just summarizing or pointing students to look at how do Chinese cultural practices, how do people communicate within those cultural practices within, say, Canada, for example. In the next section of the chapter, we look at within North America and specifically about hybrid or complex identities, and particularly in the case of the First Nations Bank of Canada and the Native American Bank in the United States. So those are two Aboriginal business units. And they have their own values, which are distinct from the mainstream banks. So we kind of talk about those and try to get at what are the values and beliefs that are behind those business units. So our goal in talking about the Chinese Canadian, Chinese American, and the First Nations banks is to get students alert to the fact that even within North America, you're going to have different cultural groups. And you need to be sensitive to that, you need to be aware of it, and you need to figure out how to communicate or how to tailor your communications to those groups. The first rhetorical situation asks students to put themselves in the place of Lauren Taves. She's a banker who lends money to business people who are originally from China and Southeast Asia, but are working in North America. Now this case is based on the actual experiences of one of my sisters. You know, as a commercial banker, her job was to go around, visit the business people that she was lending to in their workplaces. So she got to know them. She got to know their business, how busy it was, you know, the way they operated, get a sense of the place that she was, the people that she was working with. But in order to really do that effectively, you had to learn who these people were and you had to build relationships. And so that's the first rhetorical situation where we're asking students to think about how do they go about getting the knowledge they need in order to build those relationships effectively. So as we move into the next part of the chapter, we're going to look at communicating across cultures outside of North America, which is probably what students are expecting the chapter to be about and which traditionally business communication books have focused on, mostly on that outside of North America, because they're thinking about inside North America as a homogeneous unit, which I think is probably a questionable assertion anymore. So one of the concepts we introduce is called relationship-based economies. And those are economies that value personal relationships and trust as a precondition for business relationships. And that's a key thing, is trying to figure out if that's the situation, how are you going to work within that? How are you going to communicate within that? And to talk about that, we introduce the concepts of high context cultures, which are cultures that communicate through indirection and suggestions, and low context cultures, which are cultures that state directly what the speaker wants to communicate. And typically, that's associated with North America, or certainly Canada and the US. So features of low context cultures. So we were talking about North American cultures, countries, as I just said, and European countries, including the United Kingdom, but also Australia and New Zealand. High context cultures typically are the Asian countries, such as China, Japan, Korea, Thailand, Vietnam, some Middle Eastern countries, such as Iran and Iraq, and South American countries, such as Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Ecuador, and Colombia. So some of the things students need to be aware of is that when you're speaking with someone from a high context culture, nonverbal messages and gestures may be as important as whatever it is you're saying. Status and identity may be communicated nonverbally and must be acknowledged. Face saving and tact may be important, and they have to be balanced with the desire to communicate fully and frankly. Building a good relationship can contribute to effectiveness over time. And indirect routes in creative thinking are important alternatives to problem solving when blocks are encountered. We talk about three concepts: power distance index, which is the measure of the cultural expectations between managers and workers; hierarchy, which is the degree to which social relations are managed either from the top or elite members of society down through managers to the workers. And the third concept that we think is really important in intercultural communication is gender relations. So expectations about the appropriate roles of men or women. And that comes up in the first rhetorical situation as well. So some of the strategies that we offer students for talking about or communicating interculturally is to offer a salutation in the language of the person you're writing to, offer to provide a translation or a summary in the language of the person you're writing to, and really to limit your use of idiomatic words and phrases. So that's life. Well, that phrase isn't going to mean anything to somebody, or it's going to be really problematic for them to understand. So that's something you want to avoid when you're writing, or look through and edit your writing to get that out. When I was doing presentations at international conferences, one of the strategies that we adopted was to try to make sure that everybody had their slides in more than one language. And in that way, people in the audience could more or less follow what you're saying, even if they may not catch the English fast enough. The slide will help them figure out where you're going with your presentation. We also talk about politeness, formality, and interaction practices. Some of the most interesting things about intercultural communication are things like this: who opens and closes conversations? You can pay attention to that in your normal life, just without working with a different culture, to try to figure out who's got the power here and what are the ways we tend to do these things. And then another one is, how do you determine who speaks next, which is really interesting. So turn-taking is what it's called, I think, in communication studies. So who may interrupt? It's another really, really fascinating thing to look at and pay attention to. And how do they interrupt? Like, where are the points at which somebody can interrupt somebody else? Another thing to pay attention to in oral communication is, how is silence used? So is it deferential? Is it awkward? Like, how do you characterize silence? Is again, a fascinating thing to pay attention to in people's conversations. And another, finally, when we ask students to think about humor. It's generally a bad idea, but in some places it's appropriate. I use it quite a bit, but if I'm working with someone from another culture, I'm going to really pull that back because I'm just not sure how that's going to be understood. So towards the end of the chapter, we point students to some sources for intercultural learning. The Center for Intercultural Learning, for example, Quintessential, the International Business Etiquette, Manners, and Culture website, and something that's called a Gert Hofstede analysis. So he was the one who talks about power distance relations and things like that. Ultimately, what the chapter says to students is this: you know, you've got to approach intercultural communication situations in a sophisticated manner. So a lot of the exercises that we're asking students to do in the chapter is really get out and start doing some of that research. It's at their fingertips now. They can find this stuff on the web very quickly. And as they start to sort of build their knowledge here, then they're going to then take that knowledge and apply it to certain situations, both in the book and also the situations that they encounter in their own lives. Well, thanks for listening. Again, the name of the book is Business Communication Rhetorical Situations. It's available from broadview.com. More resources are available on our website. We bcanwright.ca. Thanks for listening.